Unlabeled Leadership is a volunteer service. We appreciate our guests for their stewardship and remarkable stories. We also appreciate listeners like you who back the show with star reviews and contributions.
Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 129, Brad Smith Inspires People to Be at Their Best. Here's a shout out to listeners from Lithuania, Nagaland, India, and in the United States, Richmond, Virginia, Knoxville, Tennessee, and Ocean Springs, Mississippi. With that, let's get started. Brad Smith owns Stellar Insights Incorporated, where he coaches CEOs and business owners on igniting their business growth. Brad has had an amazing career, from being an analytical and formulation chemist, a production plant equipment designer, and even a janitor. He researches and learns about why and how things work and make them evolve and get better. Is Brad good at what he does? Well, here's one testimonial that I'll share with you. The person wrote, "When my company was struggling, I knew we needed some outside perspective to help grow us beyond our capabilities. I was fortunate enough to know Brad through BNI and felt that he would be a perfect resource for our staff. I am pleased to say that Brad has exceeded our expectations. Brad has been enormously helpful in getting the team to understand themselves and each other. Through Brad's coaching, the team is learning how to listen and work together better than I ever expected possible. Brad is someone you should get to know." Part 1. Emotional Self-Awareness. As you develop how you lead, your perspective changes. And as odd as this sounds, your brain changes as well. You have a different outlook on life, and how you work with other people and perceive them also changes. Brad shares a story about how he developed his own self-awareness and developed it in an unusual way and made some serious changes. Here's Brad to explain.
One of the events that had the biggest impact on it so far was I was 18, fall term freshman year at Oregon State. I developed an ulcerated colon, bleeding ulcer.
Oh, wow.
And it was pretty bad. And when I finally got to the doctor in December, late December, he looked at me and here's the quote, "Gee, Brad, if you'd waited 6 weeks to come see me, you'd have bled to death." He had my full attention. Then he said, "You'll never eat strawberries or corn or lettuce or anything with roughage ever again in your life." And my 18-year-old brain said, "Fat chance, buddy, that ain't happening." And then he said, "This is the pivotal point. You have a psychosomatic disease. Your emotions affect the severity of your symptoms." And I was in pain constantly. If I was awake, I was in pain. I was bleeding. And he was accurate. If I'd waited 6 weeks, I'd have probably bled to death. In that moment, I made the commitment to conquer the disease. So I changed my diet, and that helped a little bit. I started watching my internal emotions. I tracked everything. I was in chemistry at the time, chemical engineering, actually. I was tracking literally all of my emotions. And when I figured out which particular emotions were, and it took me a couple of years to figure this out. Yeah, I'd gotten the bleeding stopped with the diet changes and some of the emotional changes. I made the decision in the moment I was talking with him, even though I didn't know the tools or the wording for it, to rewire my emotional state so that I would change the disease and have it gone forever. It started me on tracking emotions, pattern tracking, watching cause and effect in my body and in my life and in my emotions. It eventually got back to a single memory about maybe 10 years later, tracking everything down. Got it to a single memory of my first spanking. And I went back in with hypnotherapy and rewired that emotion. And I think I was probably about 12 or 13 months at the time. My first spanking, at least the one I remembered, went in and rewired it. Within a year, all the symptoms were gone. He changed my life.
That is amazing.
The result of that is I know my emotions very, very well. I know how my character is composed. I can look at someone and see how they're composed in their character, see all their flaws and all their good points. I track that deeply in myself. And as a result of that, we use ourselves as the radar screen, if you would, for how we look at other people. And so that lets me work with the people, my clients, so that I can help them become successful.
One of the interesting things about when people react to situations, they observe something behaviorally. In their heads, they fill in the gaps. They tell a story about what's going on. And then their emotions is based on the story. They react to the story, whether the story is accurate or not.
That is so true. We make instantaneous decisions. Our emotions are triggered. We don't choose them. The moment of choice is way earlier in my life, our lives, which I found out the decisions that led up to my bleeding ulcer started when I was 12 or 13 months old. Those triggers were available to me. And when I got into situations, they get triggered. We make judgments. You're absolutely correct about that. And then we react to it emotionally.
That's what's amazing about human beings is there is a moment in time, a very short moment in time in which one of our triggers happens. We can go into autopilot, which happens all the time, whether we intend to do that or not, or we may recognize that this is a trigger that you're trying to monitor for when it happens, and you could choose to react differently or interpret it in a different way than your automated way.
Well, I look at emotions, now that I've studied them a lot, as a habit set. It's a set of learned habits. We choose them by watching the people around us as we're growing up. We choose them, but we make decisions early on, and they're embedded in our subconscious, those habits. When I made a decision, I was going to track this and change it. Over time, what I would do is I would catch myself after I'd made the decision, after I'd had the emotion, after I'd had the reaction, and say, next time I'm going to change that. And so it would move time-wise earlier and earlier and earlier in the triggering process until it got to the place where I would be conscious of the trigger before or as it was happening and change it. And eventually I got to the place where that habit pattern was completely changed. I no longer had the reaction because I'd walked it back time-wise. It might take me a year or two to do that. If you track it and pay attention to it and make the decision over time, you can rewire those habits that we call emotions.
One thing that I found interesting, and particularly with me, is that as an entrepreneur, whenever there's a setback, we could react and be devastated. That could happen over a long period of time, or we can give ourselves a set amount of time and say, you know what? The next time this happens, I am going to allow myself to feel it and be upset by it. But you know what? I'm not going to spend a week being upset about something. It's a choice. And you can narrow that duration, maybe not to an hour or 5 minutes, but you can definitely shorten that if you recognize that you're reacting to a negative experience. And at some point, it's time to move on.
I call that growing up.
Part 2, step in and make a difference. In this segment, you're going to hear two stories from Brad about leadership. The first is kind of short, but well worth hearing, as well as the second one. Here's Brad with his first story.
I had a period of time where I was riding the bus. I was living in Portland, married to my second wife, and I was riding the bus in order to get to where I needed to do. And I had been downtown in Portland, Oregon, and was riding back. We got to a stop, and the bus driver dropped the ramp for the person to take their wheelchair out. And so when it was down, everything was fine. But when he tried to bring it back up, it wouldn't work. The hydraulics gave out on it. And I looked, and he wasn't doing anything. And I looked around the bus, and he said, well, we're stuck until another bus comes and picks us up, and we can all exchange. What? The only issue is that the lift thing won't lift? So I looked around me. I pulled four or five guys out of the ridership there. We got out, and I managed them, directed them through. They were bigger than I was. Picked up the ramp and moved it back in because of the hydraulics won't work. And it wasn't light. It was probably 150 pounds. But between the four of them, they picked it up and moved it back into place. And nobody else had picked up that opportunity, seen the vision, or guided the people. And so to me, that's one of those kind of short momentary things that you can do to do leadership. That was fun. What it shows is the opportunities every one of us has all the time to be aware of our situation and step in and make a difference. And that's what leadership is about.
If you're on a team and if you're in charge of the team, a supervisor or manager of the team, it illustrates what you did, that anyone on the team can come up with an idea, an insight, and get things moving in a different direction. If we allow other people to have the space to where they can do that and express their ideas, then you get everyone thinking and everyone potentially leading.
Brad's second story illustrates the principle connecting with others. Again, here's Brad.
I worked at Hewlett-Packard, and we were in one division. We were moving to a different division. And at the same time, we went from 8-hour shifts to essentially 24 hours, 24/7 in production. We hired a bunch of people. And in that process, the shift into the new division, I was one of 16 supervisors for this integrated circuit production area. And I saw the opportunity to make a significant difference in how the integrated circuit flow was. And the key in that was communication. I started working with my fellow supervisors and the production workers, and we laid out a process where instead of working, so we were working 12 and a half hours, 4 days a week and then 3 days a week. But for our shift, we would start a 15-minute conversation with the previous shift and get a complete download for everything and track all the lots in the entire production facility. And then at the end of it, we'd match with the same team who was on their 12 and a half hour shift for 15 minutes, and we would walk through where everything was in the room. And so what we did was we essentially had a two-way conversation between the shifts where we engaged the process and communicated about all the specific lots and where they were and where they were going to be. And it wasn't that there was a small number, but it took us anywhere from 15 to 20, 25 minutes to do that once we got practiced at it. I had other people in the team lead the process. I didn't do that. I just set up the process and taught everybody how to do that. The end result was our pair of shifts consistently moved 15 to 20%, sometimes 25% more production through the production facility than the other end of the week because they wouldn't adopt the communication process. To me, that was a leadership process, and it made a significant difference in the production.
I've worked with shifts before, not as a supervisor, but I've never heard of anything like that. And it sounds like during this 15 to 20 minutes or so, your team is talking with the previous shift. You're also learning about potential holdups. I can even imagine learning about potential problems with equipment, if that's such a thing. Yeah. It sounds like it's something that could give a lot of insight and eliminate wasted effort.
It absolutely did that. The other piece of this that I just remembered was I made everybody on both teams, both my shift and the other shift, go through the entire room and talk to everybody that was involved. So they knew each one of the teams. They knew who the people, the individuals were. They talked to them on a regular basis, and they knew other people on the other shift so that they would interact better. So I made them become familiar with each other so that they knew how to communicate and who to communicate for specific issues.
It's following what I think is one of the largest crucial leadership principles, and that is connecting with others. And it sounds like that's exactly what you did, is you enabled people to know each other, and it forged connections that normally would not be there.
That was the point. So I call that a combination of rapport building and comprehension building. That to me is the core of relationships.
Part 3. Integrity and the Walking Billboard. Brad shares some advice on how we can develop our leadership. While doing so, he shares a simple but straightforward explanation for what leadership is in the 21st century. Here's Brad.
The first piece of strengthening leadership is be self-aware. You can't lead from blindness. And so if you become self-aware, then you can also use that as a foundation for becoming aware of others. And if you're aware of others, then you can lead them. Everyone has a motivation to do something. And if you listen and ask questions, you get to know the motivations of the people around you or that you lead or could lead. It doesn't matter where you are. go back to that story from Hewlett-Packard, I led not just my peers and the people that reported to us, I led four or five levels above me. And I would just put in ideas. The key thing is to listen and persuade. Rapport is really important. So if you have an idea and you offer it in a gentle way, you don't shove it, you offer it in a gentle way, it will be accepted more readily than if you shove it. Leadership is about persuasion and using other people's energies to move forward, their motivations to move. Management is about direction and control. You need both in an organization, but you have to have the insight, you have to have the willingness to listen, and you have to have self-awareness and other awareness in order to actually be a good leader.
There was an episode recently in December that I pulled segments just about the platinum rule. For people that haven't heard it, the golden rule is do unto others as you would like done to you. The platinum rule is do unto others the way they would want to be treated, roughly paraphrasing the two of them. What you're saying is so important, both the self-awareness, how to treat yourself, finding out how to communicate, connect with. If you're working with four or five levels above, knowing what they would be receptive to and how to deliver it is really important. I think there's a lot more depth than just the idea that you're conveying. There's a lot of skill that goes into not just the self-awareness, but learning about other people and paying attention to them and how to best interact with them.
The net result is you can, if you have those skills and you build them, because it's not like we're all born with those. We can learn them. They're all learnable. Key in that is how do you inspire people to reach for their highest and their best? And that's leadership. So when I talk with people, I ask them, what are your top five value? And almost everyone says their top value is integrity. And so that means that you don't lie to yourself and you don't lie to others. My definition of integrity is what I believe, what I think, what I say, and what I do all align. That means that I have complete internal integrity, and it shows up when people talk to me. Here's an example. I was traveling. I had a layover for one night in, I think it was Reno at the time. And so I walked into the restaurant in the morning. The hostess looked at me and she said, smoking in it? She said, no, non-smoking. I said, how could you tell? And she said, you just have that look about you, not smoking.
I love it.
Who you are is a constant billboard for who you are. You know, you walk up to someone and you like them or you don't like them, and it's about a 300th of a second decision. You're broadcasting who you are all the time. If you choose to be a leader, choose to lead yourself first. That's my best advice.
My thanks to Brad Smith. If you'd like to learn more about Brad, go to the show notes. And if you have a question or comment, go to unlabeledleadership.com, click the message icon, and leave a voicemail message for up to 1 minute. I'd like to thank those who donate to the show. Your contributions makes a difference because this is a volunteer service. Thank you for listening. This is Gary DePaul. Until next time. Lead on.